This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 33. Improve my catching. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about catching. Catching as a wicketkeeper? Have standards dropped in recent years, or have they just changed? Find out by listening to the show. We also talk about improving catching in the outfield and what to do if you're a beginner, advanced or intermediate. And we also help someone with twin 10-year-old daughters who want them to really love the game while developing them the right way. Listen in to find out how that goes on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's half an hour or so of cricket chat. We're going to talk about coaching. We're going to talk about playing. We're going to talk about getting better. We're going to talk about runs and wickets and winning cricket matches. My name's David Hinchcliffe. I look after things here. And coming along for the ride to provide invaluable advice are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the happy and successful director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraway. Lots of wins this season for your boys.
Yeah, very good. The kids have done amazing, really. We won the under-15 T20 National. We won the under-18 T20 National. And yesterday we won the under-17 National Cup as well. So three National Cups. Got to be pretty happy with that. And very proud of what all the kids and all the coaches have put in, because they thoroughly deserve their success.
Yeah, congratulations to everyone at Millfield for the hard work and the success. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there. All okay?
How was your season? It's tough to top all those trophies that Gareth has got in the case there, but how was your season?
Yeah, ours has probably been really useful from a slightly different angle. That we were quite a few players out with injuries, and we've been very lucky over the last 4 or 5 years. We haven't seen any long term injuries, and we had 4 or 5, but that's actually been a bit of a blessing that it's given a load of people some opportunities to get ahead of where they might be. So guys have come through and they've managed to play first team cricket when they probably realistically weren't going to play a lot of it. And in terms of preparation for next year and the preparation it's given them going back into their club cricket, it's been fantastic that they've got to play a slightly higher standard, and they've got some more opportunities, and they've got to take a bit more responsibility than normal. So, disappointing for the guys who missed out this year with various problems that had come through a couple of other sporting injuries and a couple of things that were beyond their control. But the opportunities it's presented has been really useful.
That's the thing, isn't it? You know, winning, losing, it doesn't, those things don't matter in as much as what really counts is what you gain from the experience and how you move forward. And then it doesn't matter if you've got a full trophy cabinet or you didn't win anything. It's down to how you've moved on and how you developed and what opportunities people have taken.
Yeah, let's just keep getting better. And if people are getting better, then I'm happy. And I think most people would be happy, wouldn't they?
Yeah, those trophies just tend to turn up by themselves if you focus on that. Speaking of focusing on getting better, one thing that I've been reading about this week is the standard of wicketkeeping. And I always have a pinch of salt whenever I read an article that says, oh, you know, wicketkeeping's not like it used to be. You know, I remember the days when Alan Knott wasn't even the best wicketkeeper in England and, you know, things like that. But there is some evidence that suggests that wicketkeeping standards perhaps haven't gone up at the same rate of other fielding position standards. So I was wondering what your guys' perspective was on it, from whatever level, you know, perhaps at international level, but also at club and school level as well. What are standards of wicketkeeping like compared to years ago? Have they changed? And if they aren't as good as they used to be, what can we do to improve them?
Well, if I just kick it off, I think the game's changed. And I think the demands on wicketkeepers are very different from the days where you had the Rob Marshes and the And the Notts and the Taylors and various people like that in international cricket. You know, the role of the keeper is very different, and obviously it's multifaceted because there are different formats of cricket played in very different ways. So that would be my first point, really, is that the demands on the keeper are different. So therefore, the training demands on the keeper are probably different to those that I went through when I was keeping wicket, 20 years ago. So I would suggest that that's one of the reasons that could be there. And the second one that I think is that generally wicket-keeping is under more scrutiny as fielding is under more scrutiny nowadays, because there's cameras everywhere. You've got commentators that look over every single replay about 15 times from 10 different angles. Whereas in the old days, if somebody dropped a catch, you know, if an Alan Knott happened to drop a catch in a test match, then you'd rarely get a replay sent back and all of a sudden it's forgotten for a little bit. Whereas now, you don't get the chance to forget any mistake. And I think that's the same in goalkeeping as well in football, where, you know, if you want to watch goalkeeping mistakes, you can watch it any time you want, 24/7. So that would be another point that I'd raise. And then finally, I think we get a little bit of rose-tinted glasses. I think we all would like to think that it was better in our day, but we can't quantify it, so those rose-tinted glasses come out. And I think sometimes, if I look at kids now, if I look at some of the keepers that we've had at school in recent times and the ones that are joining us now, you know, they're good keepers, and in any era they'd be good keepers. I just think that the game's changed a little bit. They need to be able to bat in different ways, score faster, score more as well, so therefore that will affect their training. Are they better or are they not? It's really difficult to compare eras. I've always found that difficult. We can't even do it with batting averages nowadays, can we? So we can't do it with subjective stuff as well, I don't think.
Yeah, I guess generally it's generally accepted that people are more athletic than they used to be. So you might think, well, you know, if you've got a wicketkeeper standing back who needs to be pretty athletic, then you would assume that things are going to be better, but how, you know, there's no way of measuring it, is there, Lavis? So what do you think about the wicket-keeping situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you could say people are more athletic, so if they're stood back, then they're going to be a bit more effective. But equally, if you're stood next to a keeper who is more athletic and you're at first slip, what are you going to do? You're going to take half a step wider again, so the job becomes the same. Nothing changes. He's got more demand on him, like Gareth has said. He's been asked to cover further distance if he can dive further. So actually, the difficulty level of the job stays the same, or if anything, goes up. So I wouldn't say we can kind of pinpoint a change or a way that's going to, a method that's going to say people are better or worse there. The one area that I would say you probably can compare the eras is the information that's out there. If you think about the batting information, we talk about the fast bowling information, the way we talk about spin and the understanding that people start to have around these disciplines, we're keeping something that very much is continuing to develop in terms of our understanding of it. How people move, how people can generate power into their movement and move left and right, and how people can catch a ball and different ways of watching a ball and receiving it into your hands. So whereas it is very, very difficult to have a direct comparison of one keeper versus another, or one generation of keepers versus another, I think definitely the information that is out there is better. And if we're applying it in the right way, we should find that we will continue to see further improvement. But like you said before, it's something that's very, very difficult. Batting standards, bowling standards, I think we look back on things in different ways. And judging a keeper now, very, very tough. But I would say the information's great.
Techniques have changed a lot as well, haven't they, Gareth? It's, you know, there used to be almost a set way with a couple of little variations, but now it's there's a lot more variety in the way that you see keepers setting up and moving.
Yeah, there is. And also, you know, I remember being coached by Notty years ago, and Notty was absolutely brilliant. I think, you know, would be one of our best keepers over a number of decades. But he was a very defensive wicketkeeper, and what I mean by that is that he would stand quite a long way back to seamers because he wanted to have as much time to take catches as he possibly could. Now, that was fantastic, but of course, your first slip then is even further back, so he was often criticised by bowlers in particular for being so far back that unless he caught it, they weren't going to get catches and slips, or those catches and slips were going to come through really low, whereas nowadays we really encourage people to stand up to take that catch on, don't we? So we can bring our slips into play, so we can catch the ball at heights further up the body. So, you know, he was good for him at catching, but not always good for the team in the fact that his slips are always set fairly deep. So, you know, again, he was great, but he was great in isolation. Would he nowadays, if somebody was coaching, we'd definitely encourage him to get up, back his skills, get up, because his skills were massive. And then you might have found we'd have had an even better England cricket team of his era, because more slip catches would have been created.
Let's finish up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team wants to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question. Nothing works for everyone.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Telling someone how you did something is not coaching.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. Good technical changes are called tweaks. Bad ones are called tinkering.
No,
no.
Now, it's this point in the show that we answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And how it works is we take a couple of questions, do our best to answer them, and whether we answer them or not, we give the best question of the week a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or you can get in touch with us through social media, and we'll give you the details of that at the end of the show. And Yuvraj is the first person to send a question in this week, and it's a pretty simple question, but I thought it might be a good way for us to go over what this really means and how you construct this kind of improvement. So it's, as I say, it's a simple question. It's, how can I improve my catching? So if someone came to you, Gareth, Lavers, and asked that very simple question, how can I improve my catching, where do you start?
Well, obviously, there's lots of different areas of catching, lots of different catches to take. But I think the first one that I would do would hit some flat catches, possibly with a hard tennis ball or an Incrediball. So you're not going to put that person at risk. And the first thing I'd be doing really is assessing the way that they move, and also assessing the way that they catch. What is their actual catch? If you take the forearms from the elbows down to the hands, how do they present in order to be able to catch? Because the flat catch is probably the one that we get the most. You know, the high catches do come along, obviously, and the slip catches come along to very few people. So it's that flat catch that we're looking to replicate first and foremost, to get a really good idea. And it doesn't take long to work it out. You know, within 15-20 catches or catching attempts, you'll have a pretty good image of what that person moves like. At that point, you can make your assessment. Is it because their setup isn't good enough and doesn't give them a chance to be able to move quickly? Is it because their catch itself, from the elbows to the hands, or even how they operate their shoulders? If that is not working properly, then we can attack that. But yeah, I would always start with a slightly softer ball, because I think you can, A, make sure that somebody doesn't get injured, and B, build up confidence. And that is half the battle with catching. And I think we see that even at the top level. Confidence is crucial. So using different variety of balls to load a challenge or to take the pressure off of the challenge has been really good. And then to layer that up as we go through. So if I was working with somebody's high catching, I might start off, for example, hitting a squash ball up in the air just to see what they're like. Obviously, a squash ball in windy conditions will move around, but if it's not windy conditions, I might go with a squash ball, hit that up in the air, don't go overly high, check out the technique, build the confidence from there. Then I might go to an incredible, which is obviously more like a cricket ball, and build that from there and eventually get to some soft cricket balls before going into some sort of match hardness cricket balls. So there's a sort of layering up effect using just basically hitting a ball up into the air or using the sidearm to get the ball up into the air. It's not difficult. Getting somebody to catch better volume is absolutely essential, and layering up, building confidence as we go is absolutely essential. So if you've got the basic technical understanding, then volume and layering will get you there.
It's, speaking of technique levers, that's an interesting example compared to any skill, but catching's a really good one. You can get people catching a lot and leave them to it and let them work it out for themselves, or you can provide some kind of intervention. How do you approach that? I mean, I know that's a bit of a difficult question, but how do you approach providing an intervention compared to letting somebody suss out their own method of catching the ball?
Yeah, it's finding a balance, isn't it? It's a bit like feeding someone a cover drive and knowing you've got some information that can help them, but also being aware that they're maybe on the brink of working out for themselves. And that probably comes with experience of just knowing yourself, knowing the information that's relevant, and knowing that individual and how quickly they can develop themselves from I guess sort of physical literacy type stuff. So how quickly do they pick up and transfer into a new skill? And if you're in a catching environment, it's going to be a pretty tough judge again. But as much as possible, I think drip feed that information if you can. So rather than getting frustrated with someone or seeing someone getting frustrated and wanting to help them, and just by throwing all the information at them and almost giving them a bit of a cheat sheet, let them try it. See if they can get to where they need to be, and then try and build towards it rather than aiming straight for the end result. At some stage, if there's that little bit of learning from themselves and if there's that thought process that has made their experience a little bit more powerful, then hopefully it'll be a little bit more valuable and it'll stick a little bit more. I do think catching's such a valuable skill, but also one that is... I think sticks with people and is learned over a much longer period of time than bowling or batting, whatever it might be, because it's something we do kind of away from cricket, even without thinking about it, than something just happens within cricket. So often people will have a more ingrained method of how they catch a ball. And it might be that's a really good starting point for them, or might be something that you've got to work away from. So, tricky to get right in terms of how you feed the information and when you do it and how much learning and how much failure you allow people to have. But if you can get that balance and you can teach people, we know it's such an important part of the game, and you'll become such a valuable member of any team if you can get it right consistently.
Bowling and batting has been taught for decades. Every coach will have a go at bowling and batting and feel fairly confident with what they're doing. But I think the interventions that have happened with fielding over the years have been pretty much non-existent. And most coaches won't go near it, from what I've seen. Which is a real great shame, bearing in mind it's actually the only part of the game that we all do together. You know, it's, to me, the starting point of any team is how they field. Because you can have the biggest impact on a result by fielding that of all three of the disciplines, in my opinion. I would go in. I would be brave. I would have a go, because most of the cricketers that you work with as a coach probably haven't received a great deal of specific fielding coaching. So, you know, you're not going to stuff them up because they haven't had a great deal of intervention previously. So be brave would be my thing. If you see something there that you think you can help, then go for it. It's not as if they're going to have had five or six other coaches telling them different things, because that would have been very rare. You'd be coaching a very experienced and pretty good cricketer if that is the case.
Yeah, it's to me, working with senior guys especially, is the resistance to technical work and fielding is higher, I think, to even bowling, which, you know, there can be a lot of resistance to it. But you sort of get that crinkled nose a lot more when you say, let's just work a little bit on trying to line up better with our throws, for example, you know, trying to get the position of the throwing arm correct when we're trying to throw down the stumps. And you get that little crinkle in the nose of people going, oh, well, all I need to do is throw at the stumps more. I don't need to change the way I throw at the stumps. I just need to get better at throwing at the stumps. So I've certainly working with adult players, I find there's more resistance to fielding. You have to push that little bit harder. So I can understand why coaches do it less, even if they want to do it more, be it purely because you get that extra level of resistance.
Can you relate that back to your batting or your bowling, though, where you say, look, if you think all you need to do batting-wise is hit the ball better, then that's fine. But presumably they're aware that there are other elements in terms of movement and watching a ball and positioning and timing and things that are important and that hopefully have made a positive impact on them as batsmen. Similarly with the bowlers, I'm sure you've worked with a lot of them on alignment and they've seen the value of alignment. So
yeah,
if that's the case, there's maybe a little bit of a cross-sell in there that you can use to just try and convince people that there is value in what you're trying to do from a fielding point of view.
The other strategy is to go in with competition. So literally set up some stumps without talking about coaching of fielding. Set up two stumps or three stumps. Say, right, by the end of tonight's session, what I want you to do is to have two sets of 10 throws, one at a certain stage of a practice, one at a different stage of a practice, and log down on the board how many times you've hit from 20 metres. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got some qualitative information there, which tells you where people are in that snapshot, yes, but it gives you a bit of an insight into what they're actually achieving. And then you can go in, if somebody's got two out of 10 and one out of 10, then you can then ask the question, okay, so you want to crinkle your nose up at me, but actually in terms of performance, that's what you're putting down. Now, if we have the added pressure of matches, are you going to up that performance or lower that performance? Well, the chances are that performance is going to go down from there. So what use are you fielding at cover when somebody drops it for a quick single? And all of a sudden, they've got nowhere to go. They can crinkle their nose as much as they want, but they've got information there that says, hang on a minute, I could get better. Because if I'm 3 out of 10 in a week's time and 5 out of 10 in 5 weeks' time, then all of a sudden, I'm going to be looked at in a different light by my teammates, and I'm going to be performing a different role and going into each of those drop singles with a different level of confidence.
And of course, if someone hasn't got access to a coach, you know, they want to work on their own or with a mate, you know, one of their teammates or something, it's good to know, if going back to what we're talking about previously, it's good to know that you can, just by going out, taking catches and trying to suss out the best way of doing it for yourself, that's going to get you so much further than certainly if you don't do anything at all, or even if you just go out and try and take catches and fail and then think, oh, well, I'm just not very good at catching and walk away. So just having that mindset of going and going, right, how am I going to improve my catching here? You don't need a coach. A coach is helpful, but you don't need a coach. You can go out and do that by yourself. And if you approach it with the right attitude, you will get better. And it's great to know that.
Tennis ball, a wall is all you need.
Yeah.
Both for catching and for throwing. So if you've got something that you can rebound a ball off of, you can improve your catch. If you've got something that you can throw a ball up against the wall on different angles, so you're receiving different balls, types of ball back to you with some chalk stumps up against the wall, then you can improve your throw. And that's what the likes of Colin Bland and Jonty Rhodes did. That's certainly what I did when I tried to follow their example when I was learning how to field. And it doesn't take anybody else other than you and a brick wall and a tennis ball, which is fantastic.
The next question is from Harry. And Harry says, I have twin girls who are 10 years old and going to a cricket academy. I myself played at club level, so I'm very keen for them to become cricketers. They've been coached for the last 8 months. They were coached with softballs, and I should say that they were not coached properly. They just play small games for cricket with cross batting. Now that I've changed their trainer and academy, they train with leather and synthetic balls, practicing proper shots. When they are fielding, they don't want to catch the ball because they're scared of hurting themselves. So it's been difficult for me to send them to the academy sometimes. Can you suggest what should be done to encourage them to practice?
Oh, well, this is a classic, actually, Harry. This is brilliant. So thank you for sharing your experience. And certainly from my point of view, I'm going to do something now which I probably wouldn't normally do in a normal coaching context. I'm going to critique the experience, because I think this is a common one for young kids, and particularly those young kids that are born into families that have got significant cricket history, I suppose, beforehand. And you know, the way that Harry, myself and many others would have learned to play the game would have been exactly in the way that his two 10-year-olds are learning now, which is to go into playing hardball cricket very early. But what Harry's experiencing with his daughters is that the timing of that intervention and that change up into hardball cricket has happened probably too quick for them. And for me, the tennis ball, the cross bat stuff that you talk about, yeah, it might not have been ideal for your perception of where your kids need to be with your history of your development and how we went about it in years to come, years previously. But the bottom line is that the person, whoever it may be, whether it's our daughter, our son, or anybody that we're coaching, needs to progress at the level that they're comfortable with. Otherwise, they'll end up getting put off the game because they've been fast-tracked to a harder ball or a different format a little bit quickly, too quickly. And this is what you're experiencing now. That softball cricket, whilst it might seem a bit babyish, it might seem a little bit beneath the level that you want people to play, is actually the cornerstone for that fun element, which is the thing that drives us all through, which is the reason why the three of us are talking about cricket on this podcast, which is the reason why you, as a dad and somebody who loves his cricket and has loved it over the years, has sent the question in. So we need to be really careful about when we put people up and when we expose people to different formats. There may be certain elements of their game that they're comfortable practicing with a harder ball, and that could be something that you do away from an academy. But one of the worst things that a youngster can have is to be exposed to, for example, not wanting to field a hard ball in front of their peers as well. So we have to be really, really careful. So to me, a mix of some independent stuff with yourself, maybe using the hard ball around fielding in particular, alongside the tennis ball stuff that you saw before, which they probably really enjoyed, that they enjoyed being with some mates, they enjoyed whacking the ball around. It might not have been perfectly technically sound and not in the version that you want, but ultimately we've got to be really careful whenever we're putting people up into different environments, up into different formats. We've got to make sure that it's ready for them, not necessarily what we want as a coach, as a father, or as an onlooker.
I think that's really interesting, especially when you talk about the technical side of it, where there's opportunities for maybe people can be a little bit looser on their technique if the ball isn't the right type, and maybe with a tennis ball just bouncing up nice and high, you can be a little bit looser with your technique. But I'd add to what Gareth is saying and say to Harry, what kind of batter would you like them to be? Do you want to be someone who blocks a ball, or do you want them to be someone who strikes a ball? And if you think about all the batsmen, you know, you can probably put a lot of them into one camp or the other, where some people are more deflectors of a cricket ball and some people are really, really good at actually getting their hands through it and striking a really clean cricket ball. Now, if you're going to give them that time and allow them to have that exposure to the softball cricket, then I bet, even though they're going cross bat, I bet they're strikers of a cricket ball, or a tennis ball in this case, sorry. Whereas if you put them onto that hardball stuff too soon, are they still striking with the same intent, or are they now having a bit more apprehension about what's going on and potentially becoming deflectors of a ball? And that's something that you learn pretty early on, and it's not something that will necessarily last forever, and it can be adapted. But I'd like to see people striking a ball, and I think most people would like to see that ball striking as the first route to go down if we can, and having that exposure and that time in that softball cricket is vital to get that striking ability and that kind of freedom of arms and body weight transferring into the ball and those kind of things.
I always think that you can't have proper cricketers unless you have people playing cricket. So if you're not, if someone, if you're trying to teach someone to do things the proper way from the age of five, and they stop enjoying it because you're putting so, you know, so many rules and restrictions on them, then they're not, they're going to stop playing cricket altogether. And then you haven't got a proper cricketer. You've got no cricketer at all. So some people thrive under a lot, you know, under a situation where they have very specific things that they want to do. And other people, a lot, especially children, just want to have fun and they just want to enjoy it. And they just want to play games and they just want to be challenged. And they also want to improve, but it's more about enjoying what they're doing while they're doing it. So I wouldn't worry too much about technique. You can, if you've got a good coach, these things can be fed in enjoyable ways, can't they? And then once you're enjoying playing the game, then you're going to want to play it better. And that's when technical things start to come in, where you think, well, actually, I want to learn how to catch a hard ball because I'm going to be a better fielder because I enjoy playing cricket.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've got 300 kids now at Millfield that want to play cricket this year. We've just done a survey based on the ones that we knew about and also the ones that are coming. And there's 300 children that want to play cricket. Now, the bottom line is, within those 300 children, you've got internationals, you've got academy players, you've got county second 11 senior players, but also you've got people that are going to sample the game for the first time, and you've got that whole spectrum going through. If the only diet that we were to put on over the course of the next 12 months was hardball cricket, then those numbers would soon dwindle down to 150, and that would be one of the worst things that we could do. So what we've got to do is we've got to find out more about, which is what we're doing, find out more about our population, more about what they want from the game, why they're playing it, more about the type of cricket that they want to play. And we're introducing a tape ball league this year at all of our levels for anybody that wants to have a go, but in particular for the people that are sampling cricket maybe for the first time or aren't particularly confident about playing hardball cricket, and that's going to be the cornerstone of their training. And at a point in next summer where they're ready to go and play a 2020 game, they'll be offered a 2020 game against another school's, you know, C or D team. And then from that, you might find that they end up playing some B's and A team cricket in future years. Who knows? But the fact is that we've got to retain people in the game. We've got to keep their interests. We've got to find a way of meeting their needs rather than the needs of ourselves. And that's something that's been proven through huge amounts of research, huge amounts of experience. It was something that we did in Ireland significantly over there amongst all of the sports I worked in. And it's something I think we need to get better at. And applying it back over to your children is, you know, really find out where they are with their cricket and put them on their journey rather than ours or anybody else's.
Okay, and that is the end of the show for another week. There's just a couple of things we're going to do before we leave. And the first of those is to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, we give away the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com every single week on the show. And the two questions this week that are in the running for the prize are Yuvraz's question about catching and Harry's question about helping his daughters practice harder and longer and enjoy their cricket. So which one did you prefer this week, Aris?
I think I'm going to have to give the course to Harry this week. Outstanding question, brilliant amounts of detail on his daughter's situation. And I hope you don't mind that we went into critique there, Harry. Not being critical of you, but just looking at this whole situation from a broader perspective and how we put the right format, the right culture, the right experience around every cricketer so that they're retained in the game and really enjoy it.
Congratulations to you, Harry. I did enjoy that question very much. Certainly the answers alongside the questions. It was a good combination. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening in and they were thinking, how can I get my question answered on the show and also win that prize, what would they need to do to get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, you can also find us on social media. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy and our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week, it's free. Just go to your favourite podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and tap on or click on the subscribe button, and that'll come straight to your phone or your tablet or whatever other device you've got every Friday. If you want to get the show notes, you want to stream the show through the website, you can do that as well by pointing your browser to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link, and you've got all the old show details there. You can download it, stream it, do whatever you want with that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, boys.